The book of 2 Chronicles, we're going to be looking at chapters 14 through 16 there. We also may notice some passages, or one passage in 1 Kings 15, but we'll primarily be in 2 Chronicles 14. Well, the El Salvador group is getting close to leaving. Rudy and his family leave tomorrow, and then the rest of the group will join them. We'll be leaving here about Friday night around midnight, and flight will leave Nashville about 6 in the morning, and then they'll get down to El Salvador a little after lunch. And so we want to petition God regularly on their behalf, and that much good will come from this trip, and we're thankful for all the effort that's gone into this trip. One other thing I would mention for those of you that have children, two things I guess I would say. Number one, Lebanon's Vacation Bible School is going on this week, and so if you have an opportunity, you can even look at this in part selfishly two ways. Number one, your kids get some good Bible. Number two, you can take them out. If they're old enough, drop them off, then you go have supper together as a date night. But Chris would love me inviting you. I know they've put a lot of hard work into that, and they're doing their own themes, so it will not contradict with any other VBS you go to. And it begins at 6:30 each evening out at Lebanon. And so we look forward to that. The second thing I was going to say about kids is if you have kids in the age range of 4 to 7, you ought to consider going to Pee Wee Camp this weekend. If you've never gone to Pee Wee Camp, it's very important to get your kids introduced to camp. It's a great way to spend a weekend with your kids, and they have a great time. And then camp, as Ryan's been saying, camp starts on Sunday with Teen Week and goes through the rest of the summer, various ages and things the rest of the week. And we always have a lot of kids go to camp, and be sure yours are one of them. Asa is an interesting character. I have to be honest, I'm not exactly for sure all to make out of Asa, because there are some very good things about Asa, and I guess maybe that's what we make out of him, in that we can identify with him because he does some good things, but he also does some very poor things. And we want to observe both of those this evening. I think a encouraging thing about that is that overall his life is viewed as good. And I hope that all of us, though none of us can be perfect, we're going to have some good parts, we're going to have some bad parts, but we can, through it all, be faithful and be judged in the end as good. In 2 Chronicles, the author gives 3 chapters to the life of Asa. Asa is going to be the third king of Judah. He's the third king of Judah. And Asa, after it has been divided, and he's going to reign for 41 years. He's going to be one of the longer kings on the throne. He takes over the throne at a pretty young age, and he's going to reign for a long time as the king. I want to begin in chapter 14, verse number 1. Abijah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, reigned in his place. In his days, the land had rest for 10 years. And Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. In 1 Kings chapter 15, we learn about the reign of Asa in that, in the 20th, verse number 9, in the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa began to reign over Judah. He reigned for 41 years in Jerusalem. We learn about his mother's name. And Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as David his father had done. Asa was a good king. We're going to know how he was a good king for his first 36 years of his reigning, because he depended on God. So we'll observe his depending upon God. Notice in chapters 14 and 15 of 2 Chronicles that some of the things that are mentioned about how he trusted in God. The first example is given in verses 8 and following. When this episode comes up, in of a military battle, Asa had an army of, I'm in verse 8, of 300,000 from Judah, armed with large shields and spurs, and 280,000 men from Benjamin that carried shields and drew bows. All these were mighty men of valor. But Zerah, the Ethiopian, came out against them with an army of 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots. And they came as far as Marshia. And Asa went out to meet him, and they drew up their lines of battle in the valley of Seraph at Mershon. And Asa cried to the Lord his God, O Israel, there is none like you to help. Between the mighty and the weak, help us, O Lord our God, for we rely on you. And in your name we have come against this multitude. O Lord, you are our God. Let not man prevail against you. Notice that when Asa runs into a very difficult military and political situation, he, with his army of 300,000, joined with 250,000 men from the tribe of Benjamin, so he has about 550,000 men, have to go up against a superior force of Ethiopians who have over 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots, which was very significant in that day. His men, some of them were just armed with bow and things. And so he is very concerned. It looks like his army could be wiped out. So he cries unto God, and he says in his prayer, we rely, we depend upon you. Verse 12, so the Lord defeated the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled, and then they will pursue them, and we read about how they pursue them, and none remained alive, for they were broken before the Lord and his army, and the men of Judah carried away very much spoil. We find that Asa had been able to serve for some 10 years of peace, and now after defeating the Ethiopians, he's going to be able to reign for many more years of peace. What's significant about this story is that when he was in a crisis, he put his faith, his hope in God. He depended upon God. The next time we see him depending upon God is in chapter 15. The Spirit of God came upon Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa and said to him, hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For a long time, Israel is without the true God and without a teaching priest and without the law. But when in their distress, they turned to the Lord, the God of Israel, and sought him, he was found by them. And in those times, there was no peace to him who went out or to him who came in, for great disturbances afflicted all the inhabitants of the land. They were broken in pieces, and nations were crushed by nations. He's talking about, the prophet is, the distress that the people have felt in ages gone by when they did not turn to God. And he's saying the nations have overtaken us, and all the problems and the distresses and the afflictions we've suffered if we don't rely upon you. But if we rely upon God, God will bless us. And that's what the prophet is saying. And notice he says in verse 7, but you take courage. It may seem like hard times, but take courage. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. As Christians, we want to know that we're making a difference. Sometimes we might get discouraged. Sometimes we get to feeling like the good we're doing is really not having any harvest, any reward to it, maybe not making any difference in this world. But God says, and he reminds us, as passages like this, that take courage. Don't quit. Be thou faithful unto death. That to continue to work and to be steadfast in our labors, and that we will be rewarded. That good will come, not only in this world, but also in the world to come. You know, from time to time, we need to remember this message of the prophet. Asa was probably struggling with whether he should really initiate many of these spiritual reforms I'm about to talk about. Whether he should really have the courage to try to destroy the pagan idols. Whether he should have the courage to try to take on much of the factions in his own nation that were supporting idolatry.
Whether he should even take on his own family, we'll look at that in a moment. And he's struggling with that. And the prophet says, you can do it. It's not going to be easy, but you'll be rewarded. Take courage.
Now let's note some of these spiritual reforms.
By the way, you can read several lists of these. The passage of 1 Kings also lists several of the reforms he made. Let's notice some of them here. Let's go ahead and drop down to verse 16. We'll come back to the earlier verses in a moment. Even Maacah, his mother, King Asa, removed from being queen mother because she had made a detestable image for Asherah. Asa cut down her image, crushed it, and burned it at the brook Kidron. But the high places were not taken out of Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly true all his days. Now back up, and let's go back to verse number 8. So he is going to destroy some of the idols, but not only does he destroy some of the idols, verse 8, as soon as Asa heard these words, the prophecy of Azariah, the son of Oded, he took courage, and he put away the detestable idols from all the land of Judah and Benjamin, from the cities that had taken in the hill country of Ephraim. He repaired the altar of the Lord that was in front of the vestibule of the house of the Lord. And he gathered all of Judah and Benjamin and many from Ephraim and Manasseh and Simeon who were residing in them. And great numbers had deserted to him from Israel. And they saw that the Lord was with them. Now I want you to notice this. Verse 11. They sacrificed to the Lord on that day from the spoil that they had brought 700 oxen and 7,000 sheep. And they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and with all their soul. But whoever would not seek the Lord, the God of Israel, should be put to death, whether young or old, man or woman. And they swore an oath to the Lord with a loud voice, with the shouting, with trumpets, and with horns. Let's note some of the things that are said in 1 Kings as well about it. Chapter 15. It says, for example, in verse number 12, he put away the male cult prostitutes out of the land and removed all the idols his fathers had made. But notice once again, verse 14, but the high places were not taken away. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly true to the Lord his God. And not only does he do that, but he brought into the house of the Lord the sacred gifts of his fathers. And on the sacred gifts, silver, gold, and vessels. So, he does real well. He doesn't destroy all the high places. Some of them where they were accustomed to worshiping pagans, he allows to remain. Somewhat of a maybe of a compromise there. But the Bible speaks of how he destroyed these idols. And how he instituted this covenant again with God. And how they offered the 700 oxen and 7,000 sheep. He was really depending upon God. And then I noted, and I've already read verse 16 of chapter 15, where he would throw out what might have been, once again, you got to understand the terminology, might have been his grandmother, is probably what it was. It is the term mother there, but as we described this morning, that often just refers to your ancestors and things. But his grandmother, who was serving as the queen mother, and she had made a very detestable image, and he removes her from that position. Both the king's account and the chronicle's account note him deposing her from this queen mother position. So there were a lot of leadership reforms as well. And then in chapter 15, verse 19, notice how it closes. And there was no more war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa. So he was able to enjoy peace and blessings for the first 35 years. Now, let's note this one verse here, and then we're going to look at how he depended upon himself. But you take courage. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. I want to encourage all of you who are going to El Salvador. I know every time, and I've been on many mission trips, but every time you would get ready to go, you get a little nervous, you get a little anxious about what's going to go on, and you course, have some concern about the family you're leaving behind here, and you have a lot of anxiety often, I want to encourage you to think about this verse. Take courage. Don't let your hands be weak. Focus on what you got to do. Focus on the work that you're going to do, for your work shall be rewarded. And you might feel like sometimes that, you know, I just don't really know what difference we're making, and you see some of the impact there, but you wonder about the long-term impact. You sow the seed, and you trust the Lord to reward your work. For those of us who aren't going to El Salvador, let's apply it in our own life. I don't know what situation you need to apply that. Maybe it's someone at work you've been trying to reach for Jesus. Maybe it's a family member you've been trying to work on. Maybe it's some other type of situation that you really know you need to start getting involved, maybe in the church here, maybe being involved in the teaching program, maybe working with your kids on Bible Investigators. Maybe it's, you know, getting involved in the visitation program and visiting some shut-ins and widows, or whatever it may be. Maybe if you're a man, getting involved in some public roles of leadership and worship. Whatever it is, I want you to consider, maybe you just need to step out there to take some courage and realize that if you put some effort into it, you take courage and you don't let your hands be weak, that your work will be rewarded. You keep sowing the seed. You keep trying to do what you can do, and God will bless you. Take courage. Don't let your hands be weak. And the key to all this is trust in the Lord. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. Don't trust in yourself, but trust in the Lord. Now, I wish we could end the sermon there. And you're saying, I do too. It'd be really short. But we got to go on, because He is going to change from that perspective, and He's going to begin to depend upon Himself, depending upon self. Chapter 16, the last chapter in 2 Chronicles dedicated to Asa, is going to change. And I think verse number 19 that I just concluded with is a transitional verse. In his 35th year, there was peace for all that. But now there's been no more peace. Now there's a problem. Verse 1. In the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah, that he might permit no one to go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. Then Asa took silver and gold from the treasures of the house of the Lord and the king's house and sent them to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, who lived in Damascus. Now, let me explain this just for a moment. Ramah was a border city, and the king of Israel, the king of Judah, here Asa, had some conflict. And so the king of Israel begins to fortify this city, and he was not allowing people to pass from Israel down into Judah. You remember the earlier verse talked about how many people had left Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon, and had traveled down there. He says, we're going to stop that stuff. And he fortifies this city, and he's making it where the passageway is not working. And also, it's kind of a provocation for war and for some military conflict. Asa is going to make a shrewd political maneuver. He's going to decide, I'll get some gold, and I'll get some silver, and I will make a covenant with another king, the king of Syria, Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. And notice what this covenant is about. He says to him, verse number 3, about halfway through, go break your covenant with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me. Ben-Hadad listened to the king Asa, sent the commanders of his armies against the cities of Israel. So in other words, he pays the king of Syria to engage in a conflict with Israel on his other border, which is going to cause Baasha, verse number 5, he stopped building Ramah and let his work cease. King Asa took all Judah, carried away the stones of Ramah and its timber, with which Baasha had been building, and with them he built Geba and Mizpah. fortify some other cities.
So politically, if there was the CNN or Fox News of the day, they would hail this maneuver as a great move. Because politically what happened is, he paid off a foreign power to engage his enemy, so therefore he didn't have to engage the enemy, but it took care of his problem. He got all the timber and things that had been being used to fortify the city, and now there is peace again in the land. But God is not into politics. And God doesn't like the maneuver. And so God sends the prophet in verses 7 and following to tell him, you did not handle this right. Verse number 7. At the time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you relied, notice earlier with the Ethiopians, he relied upon God. But this time, he relied upon the king of Syria. He did not rely on the Lord your God. The army of the king of Syria has escaped you. You see, God had a plan where he was actually going to deliver the army of Syria into his hands. He would be victorious, and he would be victorious even with the issue with Israel. But because he compromised, he tried to do it on his own, God's plan and God's blessings were taken away. Verse 8, were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he gave them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless toward him. You have done foolishly in this, for from now on you will have wars. Now, in our own lives, and I know this is tough, and I don't always have all the answers in my own life, and certainly not in your life. But lots of times, when we have problems, we try to solve it the best way we think it should be solved. We try to deal with it, and sometimes to everyone involved, sometimes to ourselves and our own family, it looks like we solved it really well. And what God in heaven is saying is, yeah, you might have solved it, but if you just would have trusted in me, I would have solved it a completely better and different way in giving you a blessing. And because we don't ask God, we might feel like, well, you know what? I dealt with that. That worked out fine. But we miss out on a blessing that God was wanting to bring into our life because we don't trust in him. And so when we go through problems, we need to ask ourselves, am I trying to do this by myself? Or am I trusting in God? Am I depending upon God? Now, let's get another lesson out of this too. When you mess up and get in trouble, admit you made a mistake. Don't get mad at the one who communicates and convicts you of your mistake. Because Asa makes a very big mistake. In verse number 10, Asa was angry with the seer, with the prophet. And he put him in the stocks in prison, for he was in a rage with him because of this. And Asa inflicted cruelties upon some of the people at the same time. Basically, he got so mad at God that he then takes it out on the prophet and upon God's people. Now let's continue to read, because the last thing that he fails to do has to do with the disease in his feet. The acts of Asa from first to last are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet. Don't really know exactly what that means, except obviously it's some kind of infliction to his feet. Don't know the details of the problem. But his disease became severe. But notice this. Yet even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but sought help from physicians. It seems to me that he was bitter and angry at how God had handled it the last time when he didn't seek God's help.
And so when he gets in trouble the next time, like a stubborn child, he says, I'm not going to ask again. It may mean that I'm hurting and I'm afflicted, but I'm going to figure a way out to deal with this on my own, and I'm not going to ask. You know, there's a lot of people. If they get upset at God, they get angry with God, and God is waiting to bless them again, but they're still bitter, they're still mad, and they refuse to ask. And like a child that has to stay in punishment, they are only hurting themselves. And then the Bible records about Asa that he fell asleep with his fathers. In verse 14, they buried him in the tomb that had cut for himself in the city of David. They laid him on a bier that had made filled with various kinds of spices prepared by the perfumer's art, and they made a very great fire in his honor. It's kind of an interesting tidbit there. They just made a great fire in his honor. I don't know what the significance of that is, but it's kind of interesting. He depended upon himself. Asa, depending on God versus depending upon self. When we think about the life of Asa, there's many good things. And overall, he's recorded as a good king. But he made some mistakes toward the end of his life that hurt him. And really, it involved this idea of relying upon God. Earlier, when he relied upon God, he was blessed. When he refused to rely upon God, then he did not receive those blessings, and he missed out. This evening, maybe you're like Asa. Maybe you have not been depending upon God. Maybe you need to make a public response and rededicate your life. Maybe you've even been angry at God over some past issues and some bitterness has crept into your life. Don't stay mad at God. Turn your life back to Him. If we can help you in any way, come as together we stand and sing.
I can hear my Savior calling.